Welcome back. Our guest this week is House Appropriations Member Representative Julie Brixey. Our lead story, the budget logjam is broken, the deal moving forward, but they're not there yet. On the OTR panel, Shayna Roth, Riley Began, and Kyle Malin. Sit in with us as we get the inside out, off the record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to Off the Record. Well, we've got a budget deal, goodness gracious, but it's not done. And Riley, what broke the logjam?
It's hard to tell. Maybe just public pressure. They're getting to the end of the year and they have to figure something out. A lot of these programs are really popular. The Autism Navigator seems to be something that started a lot of controversy. So yeah. I don't know, maybe they're just starting to bow.
I mean, yeah, I think that's probably a lot of it. And I think, too, I think at some point everybody came back from Thanksgiving break or even during Thanksgiving break and realized, like, look, we cannot end the year with hundreds of millions of dollars just sitting there on the table. We have to sit down, figure this out. And I think that people are going to give on both sides, but it sounds like Governor Whitmer might be giving the most when it comes to this.
Yeah, it's a TikTok thing, you know. You got to wait till the end of the year or some kind of pressure, some kind of deadline pressure before the legislature and state government in general likes to move. And in this case, we had the pressure of the Senate Majority Leader's got a knee surgery on the 17th, and you've got legislators here doing this on this date. And so the calendar just worked out. And if you want to get bills to move at a certain time, it just had to happen last Wednesday, and it finally happened.
Was Mr. Shirky the final piece to acquiesce to make this thing move?
Yeah,
it seems
we
like
think
it.
So?
Yeah, I think so.
And let me ask you this. I thought of this last night. To what degree, if any, did his comments, negative comments, create an atmosphere where he was sort of the odd guy out, and now not only is he standing in the way of the deal, but now he's a bad guy to boot with it? Did that have anything to do with his change of heart?
It definitely didn't.
It didn't help.
Yeah,
probably.
It didn't look good for him. Yeah. So I'm sure that there was some more pressure on him to get a deal done.
People were pulling him aside and saying, "Mr. Shirky, you need to do something here."
I mean, they are coming together. She sent him a bat cake for his birthday to kind of play off of his bat. How are we allowed to say it?
Feces is what we're using.
Okay. that all the Democrats are bat feces crazy. So, I mean, it does seem like they at some point have started to reconcile. They're getting that sense of humor. But I would imagine that in the days after that comment, he was getting a lot of flack and a lot of pull-asides to talk about that.
I remember when the initial line item vetoes came out and the budget transfers came out. Don't you remember the Shirky talking about December, that we might not get to it until December? It was as if that was the goal in his mind all along, and that in the meantime, his members would just go ahead and beat up the governor in their districts about how these cuts were going to impact them. And I think we saw that over the Thanksgiving holiday. Various members of the Senate were putting out press releases in their own districts saying, we're not getting road patrol money, we're not getting money for our jails, and it's all because of the governor cutting things. And I think now that we get to December and we've adequately run out the clock on any hope of getting any kind of gas tax increase or any increase in transportation funding, I think he basically said, yeah, okay, let's go ahead and do this. But unfortunately, though, in the mind of the public, this has almost become like a late season Detroit Lions game against a bad Chicago Bears team. It's like we're sitting there and we see the score and we're like, yeah, okay, but does it really matter, you know? Yeah. I mean, somebody actually won the game, but in the end, who really cares?
Well, the game's not over yet.
Okay, no,
let's,
you know,
let's
we're
not popping any
corks
on the
champagne.
We're in the
fourth quarter still.
We have a what's called in the biz a shell bill, which is basically an empty bill that will contain language that will take some power away from the governor. Is that going to be flying or not?
I mean, they're going to move it. It's a part of this deal, clearly. You know, Shirky has said that having a legislative solution is, you know, something he needs in it. You know, what's in it is something that we'll figure out next week exactly, I suppose.
Well, we're sort of picking up that what's in it is she will give up her unilateral authority to move the pieces around in the budget without the legislature, which is a huge gift.
Well, yeah. Now the legislature is going to have some oversight over the administrative board process, similar to what the legislature has right now. over executive orders. I mean, the legislature does have a 30-day window in which to essentially veto an executive order, and that's kind of like what we're talking about here. But let's keep in mind that I don't know how many more times Governor Whitmer is going to use the authority.
Has said, as long as you're negotiating with me, I don't have to use this, guys.
So this may not be a big deal as far as she's concerned, considering she doesn't plan on using it. And in exchange, what she's getting is that the legislature is going to agree in statute that they will get the budget done by July 1 every single year.
But she did say that, you know, I am not going to limit my authority at all. So, I mean, I'm curious how people are going to react and sort of, you know, in the long run, how big of a give is this going to actually appear, even if she never uses the authority again. She said she wasn't going to limit it for herself or for any future governors. To me, that's why she might be losing the most in the long run.
If we put those two things on a scale, the scale would not look like this. It would look like this.
Yeah.
Okay, giving up power and getting a date certain for passing the budget, if we took those to the dime store, you were not going to get a lot for this, although it is something that she can say, I got.
And we were talking about, you know, are there any teeth to that deadline? You know, what happens if they miss it?
Yeah.
They all go to jail.
The paddy wagon comes in, they all go to Lansing lockup.
Yeah, like, is that going to happen?
Wasn't language floating around that if they missed a deadline, they would start to lose pay? Remember that?
Yeah.
Maybe she could work that in there, too. So all of this stuff supposedly will come to a head on Tuesday when we see the final language. And then I've heard that they're going to leave after Tuesday. Have you heard that and not hang around?
I have not heard that. But they got other things that I've been told they want to get done before the end of the year. So if they plan to get all this budget stuff done and things like the gambling bill package, they wanted to get that done by the end of the year. There's some other stuff, you know, random cats and dogs floating around. I mean, they might say we're going to be done by Tuesday, but it'll really look like Wednesday morning when all of us are tired and in our slippers at the Capitol.
Do you agree that two of the people that should take a bow here are the Speaker of the House and Curtis Hertel, the Senate Democratic guy? I think those two guys did some shuttle diplomacy to get this thing off dead center. Do I have an amen or anybody?
Yes.
Yes?
No, I agree.
Yeah, I agree with that. First with Lee Chatfield, the House Speaker. I mean, I think he had the most to lose in this budget based on the vetoes that Governor Whitmer specifically targeted. I mean, if you look at what she line item vetoed, there are special services in his district that his people need to have because of just the geography of Mackinac Island, Drummond Island. There's special health care and education services that they need. And she went ahead and line item vetoed those, knowing she was going to put pressure on Speaker Chatfield. He came through and he made sure that there was a final deal and was really working both sides, I think, very effectively to get together the final deal.
So here we are. We'll see what happens. All right, guns. Guns, guns, guns.
We have a package introduced this week by Democrats that would essentially require universal background checks for all guns rather than just pistols, which is what we have right now. Whether or not that moves at all, is the question.
Can you say DOA?
I would be...
Apparently
probably,
not.
I guess. I think so.
And I think that what would be a victory with something like that would be if it gets a committee hearing. Like, most of the time when we talk about these types of bills and we say DOA, it means they're not even going to get into any... Like, nobody's even going to talk about them after the initial press conference. But there has been some talk of the red flag bills getting some sort of a committee hearing, maybe not... At least initially it seemed like this at the end of this year, but maybe next year that those might get some sort of a hearing. I mean, these are not bills that are aimed at taking guns away. It's just some, as the proponents of them say, this is about making sure that the right people have guns. And what are Republicans always saying? The only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. This is ensuring that good guys have guns. So, I mean, there's an argument to be made there that these are not the same type of gun control bills that we've seen in the past.
You know what's striking me about this gun legislation is how partisan the issue of guns has gotten in both the national and the state level. You know, during this press conference where the Democrats laid out this long gun package, there wasn't a single Republican in the room. There's just no sniff.
There's no members of the Republicans in the anti-gun violence caucus.
I mean, what does that say? I mean, the NRA in particular has such a hard stranglehold on the Republicans because of their influence in a primary that they're not going to move anything outside of expanding open carry laws. I mean, that's all they're going to do. The governor is never going to sign an expansion to open carry. She doesn't want people to openly or concealed carry into a stadium or a church or a daycare or anything like that. So we're at loggerheads. The Democrats are in support of tighter gun laws, and the Republicans support expanding them. And that's just the climate we're in.
You know, I'm not even sure they get a hearing on this. Fuller in the House, the chairman, might give Wittenberg a hearing. Mm-hmm. But a hearing is not. I went to Pete Lucido, chairman of Senate Appropriations. You know what his response was? Prove it to me. Prove to me that lives will be saved. I need to be convinced, and I'm not there yet. That's not exactly, bring it on, and we'll get it out of committee. I think this is in trouble.
It could be one of those things, too, that they're just doing to show constituents, we tried.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know, they got to, at some 90% of the people supposedly support this. So why doesn't that translate into support in the legislature?
Because it's polarization, Tim. It's just the polarization of this issue right now. The Republicans have one side because of they need the endorsement of the NRA. For a lot of these legislators who are Republicans, in their district, they need NRA support, because if they don't have it in a brochure, they can kiss a significant portion of their voting base away, and they know it. They need to have their support, and the NRA is never going to support more background checks or any other type of gun control like red flag.
In the House, the Republicans in the House are especially vulnerable because they have an election coming up. So I think that there is even less incentive for the House to have even a committee hearing on these types of bills. But there are versions in the Senate. And I mean, I've asked Shirky several times, are you going to put up the red flag bills in, because they're in his committee? Are you going to have a committee hearing on these red flag bills? He says, I'm still thinking about the date, but I keep my word. So we might get something.
Gaming going to be done next week, too, yes?
Sounds like it.
Yeah, they keep mentioning that as their top priority, and it seems like there's agreement on it, so.
Internet gaming, sports betting,
isn't
goodness gracious.
Exciting
we're Las Vegas.
Talking about, we can bet on a Detroit Lions, Chicago Bears meaningless late season game on our phones. It's going to be great.
This is going to fly, isn't it?
It seems like it. I mean, this has been such a fascinating package of bills, because they went to Governor Rick Snyder last year. They've been very much supported by Republicans, and Snyder vetoed them.
Yeah.
And so they had to come back to the table, and Governor Whitmer has been sort of supportive of them. She's been concerned about this pulling money away from the lottery, which, you know, gives some money to the school aid fund. So there's been a lot of talk about what are we going to do with the revenue? How much are we going to tax it and things like that? But it seems like, and it's possible, that this has sort of gotten roped in with all the budget talks, and that maybe this has been some sort of giant bargain between with gaming and with the budget and with maybe some other things, and they are finally going to probably
get it done. Mr. Shirky did tell us this week that he thought the governor finally was there on the losing money through the lottery, that they found some way to appease her and ameliorate her concerns. That was the major stumbling block, so this thing looks like it's a green light.
Yeah, and you mentioned Senator Curtis Sertel a little earlier, and I think he was the big impetus to getting this done. He really showed how he can get together both sides of an issue, the Republicans and the Democrats, working with the governor to get a tax rate that she could live with, and then working with the lobbying community in the House and the Republicans. He did a masterful job to make this happen, and he deserves a lot of credit for it.
If we're wrong, we'll destroy this tape, okay? Let's call in our guest, Representative. Democratic Representative Julie Brixey is vice chair of the House Campaign Finance Committee and sits on the House Appropriations Committee. She's in her first term. She comes to state government after 18 years in local government. She holds her undergraduate degree from the University of Illinois and her master's from MSU. Representative, welcome to Off the Record. It's good to see you.
My pleasure, Tim.
All right, let's do it.
So this has been your first term in office, and it has been a fairly tumultuous first year. I mean, has it gone, particularly with bipartisanship and with the budget, has it gone the way that you were hoping it would go? And I guess what has surprised you?
What's surprising to me, you know, coming from local government and having spent two decades in township government, in that setting, I was able to face and solve all of the really big challenges that we faced, the unfunded pension liabilities our community had, our road problem in the community, and yet in state government, it's extremely difficult to face the systemic problems that exist in the state, and the depth and the height of that mountain has been a little bit more surprising to me than I expected.
So what do you think of this budget deal?
Well, I'm really encouraged that we finally appear to have a deal coming. It's been a long time coming. The political posturing that took place lasted a lot longer than I certainly would have expected.
What do you think about the roads deal? I mean, there's nothing dealing with transportation really in this deal. What does that say about the prospects of a higher gas tax or additional road revenue in 2020?
Well, when I left the Capitol on Wednesday, I ran into Chair Hernandez walking out to the parking lot. And, you know, I asked him about that. I said, does this mean that we're done and we're not going to get any road funding and we're not going to look at the roads? And he said that he thought that we would be looking at it and revisiting that topic. You know, clearly not this year, next year. And, you know, it's a disappointment to me because the roads is really a simple, finite math problem. It's not an easy problem, but it's a simple problem. We have a limited number of roads. We know how many roads we have. We know how much pavement we have in the state of Michigan. And we know how much it costs to fix those roads. We know how much it costs to maintain those roads. And all you have to do is translate that math into revenue. And where are you going to come up with the revenue? We pay for roads with user fees in the state of Michigan. We utilize the gas tax. That's the method that we use. If we don't have the courage to switch that to a different revenue source, so be it. Then you know, if we want to get out of this this sort of nationwide worst record. We have the worst roads in the nation. Is that what Michigan wants to be known for, the worst roads in the nation? You know, how are we going to succeed in the global economy in attracting manufacturing and attracting people to live in our state who can live wherever they want if we have the worst roads in the nation?
So did you agree with the governor for vetoing that large chunk of money in the budget that would have gone towards roads?
You know, that was just a shell game. We had an unprecedented budget this year. We had a budget that was presented to the governor that was unnegotiated. I don't believe that has ever happened before. And the money that was collected throughout the budget was hurting other programs that are very, very valuable programs. You know, we have the My Choice waiver, for example. We've got tremendous needs with our aging population in terms of health care here in the state of Michigan. And we've got a long waiting list for people to get services in their homes so that seniors can stay in their home longer, which we know is a lot cheaper than the alternative, which would be an assisted living facility. And yet we're unable to provide the funds necessary for those programs and other important programs because we continue to operate the state general fund on a $1998 dollars. And you can't expect $1998 dollars to translate into programs that are keeping up with inflation and providing what our residents need.
So did you end up with a good deal for Democrats in this budget?
I'm happy with the progress that we're making. I feel like some of the steps are baby steps, you know, but we do have early literacy coaches, and that's another thing that is really, really troubling, that Michigan's the only state in the nation with declining literacy scores. So we took a step to address that. We've got, you know, some money in there for PFAS. We've most importantly, we fixed the critical structural deficits that had been created by the Republican crafted budget in terms of, you know, some, they're not really exciting things, but they're really important things. So the tethers for parolees, you know, the corrections department, appropriate funding of the DTMB and meeting our IT needs. We also funded the commission for redistricting to end gerrymandering. And we put in funding in place for correctly conducting the census, which is going to have a really important role in us securing federal funding for the coming decade.
Put your hat on is you're raising money for the Democrats to take control of the House, right?
Sure. Yes, okay. I am.
And your chances of taking control of the House are slim and none?
Well, I am not a betting person, Tim, and you probably know that about me, so I'm not going to put any kind of a percentage on
it. That's because the number is so low you would be ashamed to say it in public.
I completely disagree with you. We have a great setup for taking majority this time around. We took a big step in the 2018 election, flipping six new seats, and we only only have 4 seats to go, but more importantly than that, we have phenomenal folks in the seats that we did flip. We've got great candidates, and we have a president that is bringing people into the Democratic Party every single day.
Well, the president's going to be in Battle Creek coming up later this month to rally more folks. He really thinks that folks love him in this state, and they came out and supported him in 2016. What's to say they're not going to do it in 2020 and help fellow Republican House candidates take seats?
I don't think that the people in Michigan believe that he is doing things that are helping Michigan. Our farmers are really, really struggling. Our working men and women throughout the state do not have an easier time than they did in 2016. You know, you go and you ask yourself, are things better now? Are things better than they were before? And I don't think the answer for many people in the state of Michigan is yes.
But the Republicans continue to outraise you on the money front.
They do. And if money voted, Democrats would never win elections because we have been outraised by the Republicans for decades, probably for eternity. But what we do have is we have fantastic public servants like Representative Angela Whitwer, like Representative Lori Pahutsky, like Representative Mari Manoogian, who were able to win their hotly contested seats despite being outspent by the Republicans because they took the time to get to know their community intimately, and their community knows and trusts them. And that's something that really overpowers the few billionaires that have been in the practice of trying to buy the Michigan legislature.
As part of this budget crafting process, you were involved in kind of tearing apart various parts of the transportation budget, like selling the Blue Water Bridge, selling airports, selling assets. Do you think you got the message across the Republicans that selling assets isn't a good way to balance a structural budget?
Yeah, it wasn't in the final product. And, you know, I am just doing my job here, Kyle, and I'm a numbers person. You know, I spent 20 years in local government, 10 years as treasurer, really looking at the numbers during hard times in my community. And when we were presented with those options, I did my homework. I went and I asked the departments, what does this look like? Are we even allowed to do that? And the answer, of course, was that wasn't going to solve any create any magic revenue for the state, and one-time money wouldn't solve any of the problems that we have, and it wasn't even going to generate any one-time money when you looked at the details of the different ideas that had been suggested.
So given your background, I'm curious, what do you think is the biggest environmental threat facing Michigan right now, and what should we do about it?
Ooh, that's a tough one. You know, PFAS is the immediate kind of unsolved environmental threat that we have right now. At the same time, climate change could potentially be a larger dollar value impact to the state, because if you look at our agricultural production, you know, Michigan is second in the nation in agricultural diversity behind California, and we are seeing some really negative impacts of climate change, and this year was a perfect example of it with, you know, combination of cold, really wet spring, followed by a drought during midsummer, and then again a wet fall and an early winter. You know, those things are all part of climate change, that those big swings in temperature. And so I think that climate change is something that really needs to be addressed, but PFAS in the short run is something that needs immediate attention, and this budget does have a little bit of funding in there to address that problem.
You're comfortable with people making bets on their phones?
I think that a lot of the issues that we had with the betting and gaming legislation have been resolved, and I think we're probably going to see movement on that next week.
Why did you laugh at that question?
Because you said, are you comfortable with people making bets on their phones? I'm not making any bets on my phone, but as I mentioned, I'm not a betting person.
How about a 16-year-old doing it?
I don't think that is legal.
But are there enough protections in the bill to prevent that from happening? And, like, could you find out if 16-year-olds are placing bets on their phone? Like, are these bills going to protect youths enough?
Well, that's an awesome question, and you've given me some great homework that I'm going to go to the office today after this session and check out.
So you're going to hold your nose when you vote yes on this. Yes?
I believe that I will be able to support it.
Joe Biden or Elizabeth Warren, who do you like better? When you're going to the voting booth, who do you like better?
Well, Kyle, we have so many awesome candidates this time around. I went to the presidential debates that were held in Detroit, and one of the things that really struck me as I was sitting there in the audience was that each and every one of those candidates at some point in the evening said something that really resonated
who
with
do you
me
like,
here.
Representative?
And the, you know, the collective values, democratic values and ideals that we have on the stage are really
like?
Great. I haven't settled in on anyone yet. Joe Biden has an excellent international reputation and probably would be invaluable in repairing the damage that the president has been wreaking worldwide. Bernie Sanders is someone who has really motivated young people and gotten young people engaged in the political process like nothing I've ever seen before. Warren is a tireless advocate for working people and a real watchdog for commerce and banking. And, you know, I was a little disappointed to see that Harris fizzled and dropped out. When she came out really strong in the beginning, I really admired her and had a lot of respect for her. Maybe we'll see her as a VP candidate.
Well, let's say good night, okay? Thanks for showing up. We appreciate it very much.
Oh, my pleasure. My
all
pleasure.
Right. Thanks, guys. See you all next week right here on Off the Record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. For more Off the Record, visit wkar.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.